You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. In this episode, we will talk about the latest news around baseball, recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this week, give some streamer recommendations, and answer some mailbag questions from the pitcherless community. With a full week of games under our belt and the regular season schedule underway, this is a very back-to-normal feeling podcast for us. So, John, how have you been this week? What's new?
Not a whole lot. I mean, it does really feel like it is baseball season. Well, because it is, but you know, it's kind of interesting that baseball's now kind of back into the normal rotation. I'll maybe catch a game at night if I'm free, or listening to the Twins on the radio. Going to my first game on Saturday, so that should be fun, weather permitting. It feels good to have baseball back in our lives.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. I actually hate this week for fantasy specifically, mainly in just head-to-head leagues.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a chance to actually play your opponent for a full week. It's like a week and a half, and now with this Seoul series in Korea, it was like a 2 to 3 week adventure for this week in fantasy. So really don't like this week for fantasy purposes, but I went to the Mets home opener. We obviously lost, not a great time, and then we went on to actually lose a lot more games in a row. We finally won one during the doubleheader against the Tigers, but man, it's been a rough start as a Mets fan, but I had a great time at the game nonetheless. Sadly, also bet on the Mets to win that game, and there goes that money, but it was a fun time, so I'm always happy to go to a game in person, root on the Mets, have a good time, and that's what happened. But for fantasy purposes and betting purposes, not the greatest. So I'm very excited for next week to start, because then we actually get head-to-head matchups that are 1 week long, which is how it should be. So then you can really get a gist of if your team is gelling, if you are weak in certain spots. So for head-to-head leagues, I think next week is really opening day for us, but this week still counts in the record book. But before we get into our podcast, just a reminder to all of you that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, so make sure you follow us on there. And if you have the time, please leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. It helps us out greatly. Now, getting into the news from this past week around baseball, we start with some very unfortunate news. Yuri Perez of the Marlins will officially undergo Tommy John surgery and miss the remainder of the 2024 season, as well as a majority of the 2025 season. Perez was initially diagnosed with mild elbow inflammation, with surgery not recommended, but it quickly escalated into the aforementioned Tommy John surgery. Really big blow for one of the top young arms in the game. I mean, he's only 20, 21 years old, and he's already getting Tommy John after an exciting rookie campaign. So, John, this one really hurts, huh?
Yeah. What's the meme? Like, my disappointment is immeasurable. And
my day is ruined?
Yeah. Yeah. That was me when I heard this news. Not because I'm necessarily a Marlins fan, but I drafted Yuri Perez, I think, in like the second round of my Dynasty startup league like 3 years ago, right?
Okay.
And been waiting for this guy to come up to the majors. Last year, finally joins the team, looks great. This year, expecting even better, right? Marlins were like, oh, we're going to limit him to 150, 170 innings. Disappointing for sure, but it's like, hey, that's still 150 innings of like what, a top 20 pitcher. I'll take that. And then hearing him deal with, you know, like a blister on his finger,
yep,
for all of spring training. I was like, okay, he can get over that. Just, you know, a couple days rest and that'll fix itself. And all of a sudden hearing that, like, oh no, he's about to visit this like elbow specialist who like does Tommy John surgery, and then just kind of hoping that it's, you know, it's just nothing. It's just some inflammation, like the team said. And then, yeah, hearing this news was the worst. And it sucks because, like, again, like you said, he's super young. I believe he is 20 or he's turning 21 like soon. But basically, like, a guy his age would not be starting in the majors for the most part. And he was expected to play a pretty big role for the Marlins this year. So it is really unfortunate that a guy with this much potential is now going to have to undergo Tommy John surgery. And then I just don't know what this is going to save for, you know, the rest of his career in terms of durability, right? Like, we've seen so many players nowadays, yes, they get Tommy John, and then they get like another Tommy John, like, you know, in 3 and 4 years or something like that. And their elbows like never truly the same. And so it's a little rough for me, knowing that Perez is not going to be pitching for my dynasty team for, you know, a year or something like that. So it sucks, but you know, obviously, I hope he recovers quickly, and that Marlins team next year will be kind of fun with Yuri Perez and Sandy coming back from Tommy John. So it might be a really good rotation next year if they can somehow string together some hits. But yeah, tough injury for sure.
It's definitely frustrating losing Yuri Perez, especially if you drafted a little bit earlier when there was no real concern about Yuri Perez. So that's the hard part because some people might have paid premium dollar for him in drafts, and then the news broke a day or two later, or even after the news broke, people were drafting him not very highly, but maybe a little bit of a discount, and you just lose him for the whole year already. So definitely a big blow, and the Marlins now might just be sellers from here on out. Like Jazz might go, and Tanner Scott might go, and who knows who can go from this team because I'm sure they'll be moving a lot of people come the deadline if this is what the team's direction looks like because it's just not great.
Yeah, I was going to kind of say who can they sell, but like it is kind of, you know, Tanner Scott probably feels like the most normal one because, you know, every team could use a reliever. I would be surprised if they sell Jazz, but you know, I'm sure it is possible. So, but yeah, that team does not look good to start the season. And knowing now for sure that your best pitcher is also not going to be there is tough.
Yeah, definitely not good for the Marlins, and they're already starting 0-8 on the season. Just not great. So hopefully the Marlins can rebound, and hopefully they can get the ship straight with Yuri Perez being out. And maybe their rotation, like you said, will be a little bit more exciting next season with Yuri and Sandy and everyone being back together. And maybe they trade Lizardo too. That's another guy that could go as well. So very scary for the direction of the Marlins. Being a Marlins fan might be a little tough at the moment. And speaking of a little tough at the moment, Josh Young of the Rangers was diagnosed with a fractured wrist after being hit on the wrist with a pitch. He had surgery to repair it and was originally given a 4 to 6 week timetable to return. However, during the surgery, it ended up being worse than they initially thought, and it needed additional repairs. So his new timetable is 8 to 10 weeks. Young has been awfully unlucky to start his career. He broke his thumb on like a line drive to him in the field. Just some strange injuries for Young, especially after starting this season really, really hot. So hopefully he can heal up fast and get back on the field soon because the 2024 season was going very well for him and he has a lot of upside. So hopefully Young will get better soon and be back on the field for the Rangers. In accordance to that, Justin Foscue of the Rangers was called up due to that Josh Young injury, but has yet to play in a game. Foscue will likely be put in the lineup against lefties. He's a solid contact hitter against them and has pretty good defensive utility, so Foscue might be just an off-the-bench kind of guy we'll see, but he was a top prospect in their system. Sean Murphy of the Braves was placed on the 10-day IL with a left oblique strain. We're not sure on how severe the strain is, but we are sure that he'll be out for more than just 10 games. We mentioned this last week, but Justin Steele of the Cubs was officially put on the IL with a strained hamstring. Trevor Megill of the Brewers was placed on the 7-day IL for a concussion that he got after passing out while dealing with food poisoning. That's like the yikest injury of all time. It's like you got food poisoning, so you already feel crappy. Then you passed out and you got a concussion from it. I mean, what's worse than that? So hopefully Trevor Megill is okay and feels better. And speaking of Trevor Megill, Tyler Megill of the Mets was placed on the 15-day IL due to a strained shoulder. So both brothers went on the IL. And just a little fun fact to get rid of all of this sadness, I actually saw Tylor and Trevor McGill's dad at the Mets game. He was in the club that we had access to because of the seats we had, and I actually saw his dad wearing the split McGill jerseys, and it was pretty cool. So just thought I'd throw that out there, but unfortunate for both McGill brothers, both on the IL. Julio Teheran was signed by the Mets to help replace Tylor McGill in this time of need. Find it kind of funny because Julio Teheran has like the best record against the Mets when he pitched for the Braves. He just absolutely torched us. So hopefully he can help us win some games rather than take wins away from us. And I find this signing a little bit odd because we do have so many good pitching prospects in the system, mainly being Christian Scott. I mean, Jose Buto we called up for the doubleheader and he pitched fantastic. So I don't know why we don't just keep him in the rotation and we're getting Julio Teheran for that, but it's definitely questionable that the Mets aren't calling up Christian Scott or keeping Buto in the rotation and instead decided to go with an outside source. But we'll see what the plan is. Maybe they want to flip him at the deadline or something. Who knows? Next, we have Joey Bart of the Giants, who was traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Emmett Sheehan of the Dodgers was transferred to the 60-day IL. The Dodgers' IL rotation is actually bonkers. It's Kershaw, Bueller, Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin, Emmett Sheehan, and Ohtani, of course, although he's technically not on the IL, but he's not pitching. So Ohtani, Kershaw, Bueller, May, Gonsolin, and Sheehan. I'm pretty sure that's a top rotation for 27 teams in the majors. That's pretty bonkers. So the Dodgers have an embarrassment of riches. Speaking of the Dodgers, Jason Hayward of those Dodgers was placed on the 10-day IL with a lower back injury. Esteury Ruiz of the Athletics was optioned to AAA because apparently he was wearing a protest wristband. They obviously told reporters that it was for him to work on his offense and to see the ball better at the plate, but it's hard to make sense of sending out a guy who stole 67 bases last season. I know he's not the best contact hitter and he doesn't get on base very frequently to steal those bases, but he stole 67 last year, the second most in the majors behind, of course, Ronald Acuna. And you just send that guy down, who's arguably the best player or most compact player for your team. And yeah, he's just gone to AAA because nice wristband there, guy. So just Oakland being Oakland, I guess, but hopefully Esteury Ruiz comes back up for all of the fantasy players that drafted him for steals because they need him and his source of steals. And then lastly, Mike Clevinger re-signed with the Chicago White Sox. That wraps up all of the news from this week. John, any comments on this list?
Just stating for the record here that Esteury Ruiz was slashing .429, .375, .857. And that's the guy that they sent down to AAA. A guy who was getting on base like over a third of the time and was getting a hit around half the time. So, yeah, this is just stupid. And then couple that with, of course, the news today that the A's are officially moving to Sacramento for the next 3 years. Yeah, just a poorly, poorly run team. And I'm honestly impressed that they've managed to string together a couple wins thanks to, you know, one or two guys that we'll talk below. But yeah, man, it's just such a bad move. Now, granted, he only stole one base so far this season. But in his defense, you know, of his three hits, one was a double and one was a triple. So he didn't really have that many opportunities to steal a base anyways. The guy is just such an electric player, and it's unfortunate that, yeah, he's on this team.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy that you stated that slash line for this season. It's like, hey, what more do you want him to do?
Right.
What could he possibly do differently that is going to impact him to stay on the team? So you kind of have to think that it's really for that protest wristband, which is just ridiculous. I mean, sell the team, first of all. But second of all, you're really going to punish one of your better players for wanting the best for the organization, although it doesn't align with your wants and needs, of course, as a rich owner that is being cheap. But that's just ludicrous, man. I mean, they already have a terrible product on the field. The least you can do is put the best product possible on the field, mm-hmm. and they seem to not care about doing that either, so pretty upsetting about this team. And apparently they will be playing their games in 2025 and 2027 in Sacramento before their stadium in Vegas is ready in 2028. And they'll actually go by the Athletics or the A's. So no affiliation to a location. So they won't be the Oakland Athletics or the Las Vegas Athletics or the Sacramento Athletics. They will be the Athletics, which I kind of like. But regardless, this organization is just a mess.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what playing in a minor league field for 3 years is going to do to Statcast data. So,
yeah, that could be very scary, and it could skew numbers everywhere, in every direction from the road teams, and it's going to be a disaster. So we will definitely be here to watch all of that. But that wraps up all of the news from this week, and we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week. We'll be back after this. All right, we are back, and it's time to talk about the player performances from this past week. Let's start with the weekend, which was March 29th to March 31st, of course. John, who performed well over the weekend?
Yeah. Again, thanks to Ryan Amore, Kevin O'Brien, and Kyle Stanzel for their BatterBox articles for those days. But we're going to start off with Jackson Churio of the Milwaukee Brewers. 1-for-4 with an RBI, a stolen base, and a walk. I believe you were at this game, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so Churio, because the opening day start got rained out, he ended up making his major league debut on Friday for the Brewers, batting leadoff. His first at-bat resulted in a walk, ended up stealing second later that inning. And then he got his first hit in the fifth, and then his first RBI in the seventh. And then also, his sprint speed to first was clocked at 30.6 feet per second, which is, that's lightning fast. Through five games, the rookie is slashing 350, 381, 550, which is pretty good numbers. In 2023, through 122 games at AA, he slashed 280, 336, 467 with 22 homers, 89 RBI, and 43 stolen bases. So definitely a lot of room to grow for the kid, but it's nice to see that, he's doing pretty well in the majors. Yes, it's a small sample size, but seems to be acclimating to the majors pretty well. On Saturday, Mark Canna of Detroit went 3-for-5 with a double, a homer, 3 runs, 3 RBI, and a stolen base. Just a reminder that Mark Canna is 35 years old, and he put up this line, which is pretty sick. He's currently batting 5th in the Tigers lineup, and I'm not going to lie, it's pretty good if everyone is cooking. Obviously, he's got Riley Green right before him in the cleanup spot, but you still got some other guys like Spencer Torkelson, who's right there, Kerry Carpenter, who had like a mini breakout last year. So pretty solid lineup right before him. So I feel like there's a lot of RBI opportunities for him this season. And if you're in like a deep league or an AL only league and you need like an outfielder 5, you could do worse than Canna, who's rostered around 10% of leagues. I think he's going to be kind of a sneaky pick. Pick up in if you need something like counting stats. And then finally, Sunday, Bobby Witt Jr. of the Kansas City Royals went 3-for-5 with a triple, a homer, 3 runs, and 4 RBI. Honestly, after watching this game, I'm just annoyed that the Twins had to deal with Bobby Witt Jr. for the next decade, but you really can't deny greatness. Through 6 games, he's slashing 400, 464, and 880, which is crazy. That's such an insane start to the season. Obviously, none of these stats have stabilized yet, but he has a 46% hard contact rate and a 29% barrel rate. Both those numbers truly elite in like the 98th percentile in the league for both those numbers. Now, I'm not necessarily bummed that I took Mookie Betts over Bobby Witt Jr. in 2 of my leagues, but there's still plenty of season left for him to prove me wrong. Obviously, he's one of the best players right now in the major leagues, and I would not be surprised to see him in the conversation for MVP at the end of this year.
Yeah, so first on Jackson Churio, I was at that game, like you said, and It's funny because he was leading off, and I said, wow, I'm actually at Churio's Major League debut. I took a picture of the Giants scoreboard with him saying Major League debut and stuff. It was really cool. And I was like, wait, why don't I bet on him to steal a base? Because it's his Major League debut.
Yeah.
So I put in the bet, and then the game started. He walked to start the game and then stole the base immediately, and yep. I made my money. So really, really cool. Shout out to Jackson Churio. It was cool to be at his Major League debut game, seeing his first hit, his first RBI, his first steal. Even though it ended up beating my Mets, I still like seeing those things because it's very rare where you're at a top prospect's first game. So I actually really like that. Mark Canna, ex-Met, of course, love him just as a person. And yeah, I think he's a sneaky good add in those deeper leagues. I added him in an AL-only league as well as a 15-team league that I'm in. So I have a sneaky suspicion that he'll stick in that five hole, and I think he'll have like a, what I'm hoping to be like a 280 average, hopefully with 15 homers, 65 RBI, something like that. Just something light that you can fill in for util or use as a guy who can fill in for any injured player. So I do like Mark Hanna in deeper leagues. And then Bobby Witt is just incredible. I don't think it was wrong of you to take bets over Bobby Witt if that was the case. Obviously, if you had the choice, it's kind of a toss-up. I wouldn't be surprised if Mookie Betts and Bobby Witt Jr. finished ahead of Ronald Acuna this year for the entirety of the fantasy season. So I could see it happening. Obviously, Acuna is a freak and he hasn't even started to get going yet, but immediately Mookie Betts is leading the league in everything. Yeah. And then Bobby Witt just looks awesome. So I think both of them are great. You can't go wrong with either. And Mookie's positional eligibilities are just through the roof better. So
right.
I don't know. It's a toss up between the two, but I don't think you're wrong for taking Mookie over Bobby Witt.
Yeah, it's he is making it a little tough, but yeah, I definitely am not disappointed with Mookie, but yeah, and fun fact about Ronald Acuna Jr., he still really hasn't done anything at all this season. So
the Braves haven't played much, really. They had a rainout on Wednesday.
Yeah,
they haven't played a lot of games. It's kind of similar to the Mets where they're just kind of catching up now. So I think the Braves are about to take off really, really big very soon.
Yeah, everyone on Atlanta is hitting except for Acuna, which is kind of fun.
Yep.
All right. Well, moving on to pitchers again. Thanks to Nick Pollock for the SP Roundup articles. We are going to start off with Nick Pivetta because I feel like we want to talk about Nick Pivetta every week, or at least you want to talk about Nick Pivetta every week. And he certainly deserved it on Friday, going 6 innings with 1 earned run, 3 hits, no walks, and 10 strikeouts. He was dominating Seattle with his sweeper, which contributed to 8 of his 17 whiffs. Pretty much all his pitches were working, and he finished with a nearly 70% strike rate. You really can't complain about a nearly 50% strikeout rate, and let's just hope this stays consistent, because he's about to run into the buzzsaw known as the Baltimore Orioles. He did go 5 shutout innings against Oakland this week as well, so 2 cushy starts, I guess you could say, for Pivetta, and he gets rewarded with basically the most dangerous team in at least the American League, if not the major leagues right now. On Saturday, Jared Jones of the Pittsburgh Pirates made his debut against Miami, picking up the win, 5.2 innings with 3 earned runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 10 strikeouts. I'll personally admit, I was just following the bandwagon when I picked Jared Jones off waivers, and I didn't really know that much about him other than he made the Major League team, which was pretty sick. To get this start out of him was pretty nice, although I'm a little annoyed that he was one out away from a quality start. And for a rookie who is frankly overshadowed by another prospect pitcher in his organization, this is an excellent start that should keep managers around for more. Here's the actual analysis, though, of Jared Jones. His fastball is incredible. Also, his slider is incredible. He had 10 whiffs on the slider, 11 whiffs on the four-seamer, and that equals a 40% CSW. That fastball is 97, located super well at the top of the zone, and to combine that with his slider, it's just a really good 1-2 combo for Jones. He's rostered in only 50% of Yahoo leagues and 26% of ESPN leagues, so there's definitely a chance that you can pick him up. So if you're feeling shaky about any of the pitchers that you have, I think you could do worse than Jones. And then finally on Sunday, another Kansas City Royal, we had to talk about this. Brady Singer up against, of course, my Twins, gets the win. 7 innings, 0 earned runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. I'll be honest, the Twins are a pretty strikeout-happy team. They just love swinging at everything. It's not that they have bad discipline necessarily, but they just love to swing. And so the fact that Singer was able to do this while sticking mostly with his sinker-slider combo is, you know, something to take into account when looking at this start. The slider got 16 whiffs alone, and we'll see if this can continue on to his next few starts. He does get Chicago this Friday, so we're releasing this on Saturday, so we'll know what those results are when this podcast comes out. But then his next start is up against Houston, so we'll see if he can continue the consistency there, or if that's where we kind of see that Brady Singer isn't really the ace that we're all hoping he could be.
So Nick Pivetta, I just love. I'm all in on him this season. I have, I think, a share of him in every one of my leagues, but
wow,
two maybe. So like 2 out of 9, I don't have him in. And I am just fully on board for this breakout, man. I have been so tuned in to every one of his starts. He is hyped up. I love what Boston is doing in general. I'll talk a little bit more about it when I mention someone a little bit later. But I just love the whole philosophy that they're doing in Boston with their pitching. And it looks really good for Pivetta. Obviously, against Oakland, he didn't struggle. He was scoreless the whole time. He didn't give up a run. But he got into a little bit of trouble. He didn't strike out very many Athletics players. So it was not the greatest. I loved the start at Seattle here on the weekend. But I think he's going to be okay against the Orioles. I mean, someone just dominated the Orioles the other day who looked really good, and I'll mention him as well. But the Orioles are definitely scary, but I fully believe in Nick Pivetta. Obviously, he's not going to be the best pitcher in baseball, and he's going to give up a few more runs, I'm assuming, this season rather than just the one he's done in two starts. But I really, really love Nick Pivetta. So if he happens to be out there in anyone's league, I doubt anyone has him on the wire. But it's always worth mentioning that if Nick Pivetta is on your wire, please go and grab him in those 18, 10-team leagues. He might be out there. So go and pick him up. Jared Jones looks amazing. I'm really excited about this guy. I really caught wind of him in spring training more than I did beforehand. I really didn't know much about him. But in spring training, when I saw him doing well, kind of dove into him a little bit more. But he's essentially just a two-pitch pitcher. And it's so hard for two-pitch pitchers to succeed, right? Like, we've had one great season of Christian Javier, who's a two-pitch pitcher. Spencer Strider was a two-pitch pitcher, and he dominated. Now he obviously added a curveball, and he's working on other pitches and stuff. So he's an anomaly because he's no longer a two-pitch pitcher. But like Hunter Green, two-pitch pitcher that struggles. So it's so hard to back two-pitch pitchers. But I think Jared Jones is very good, and I think he's definitely worth a pickup. His roster rate should definitely be around, I don't know, 75 or 80% of Yahoo, and probably 40 to 50 on ESPN, just because ESPN roster rates are weird. But I definitely think you should pick up Jared Jones. I think he's a great guy to add off the wire. I think he's one of the best upside plays out there that you can grab for pitching. And then Brady Singer, he's probably out there as well. And I would prioritize Jared Jones over Brady Singer because we all know Brady Singer is like a premier cherry bomb. So if this sticks, great, because Brady Singer can be great. But we just have seen this so many times where he has 7 innings pitched, 10 strikeouts, and you're like, yay, Brady Singer, he's finally doing it. And then he'll give up like 8 earned runs, and you'll be like, okay, he's back to the wire. So I don't know. It's tough with Brady Singer, but this was a great start. So hopefully he can build on that. Moving on to Monday, April 1st, April Fool's Day, but not an April Fool's joke for thanking Christian Ottman for the Young, Done, and Broke Hitter Recap article. Getting into the batters from Monday, we start with Mike Trout of the Angels, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 2 RBI, and a walk. Trout is off to a hot start in the 2024 season. He's hit 3 home runs, scored 4 runs, has 3 RBI, and even has a stolen base to boot. Trout's ability has never been in question. He really never fell off, quote unquote. It's just his health that's a concern. If he is fully healthy, Trout might be the first player in history to have a 40 home run, 40 RBI season. I obviously joke, but fingers crossed that Trout can stay healthy all year, add to his Hall of Fame resume, and help all of your fantasy teams this season, because he can be very good. The Angels might not be very good, but Mike Trout is one of the best players of all time. And we kind of forget that with all of the new bright and shiny toys out there. Your Corbin Carrolls, your Julio Rodriguez, Ronald Acuna, even Wyatt Langford, I feel like, was almost being drafted higher than Mike Trout this season. It gets a little out of hand, but we forget that Mike Trout is one of the best players in baseball, and it's awesome to watch him play the game of baseball. Next, we have two Astros that had double dongs. Although they were outshadowed by the starting pitcher in this one that I'll be talking about very shortly, these guys deserve their flowers too. Kyle Tucker of the Astros went 2-for-3 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 4 RBI, and a walk. Thank God he's batting in the top 4 of the lineup. He's batting 3rd at the moment. We all know Dusty Baker is a legend, but batting Kyle Tucker 5th was maddening constantly. I kind of avoided Kyle Tucker in drafts last season because he was projected to bat 5th or 6th. And I was like, what are we doing here? He should be leading off or batting 2nd at the least. Like, why is he in the bottom half of the lineup? He's too good for that. But Tucker can easily go 30 home runs, 30 stolen bases with 100 runs and 100 RBI, and be a top 5 fantasy player this season, go in the top 5 in drafts next season. I can see it very, very clearly. But Kyle Tucker just has to do it, and I think he definitely can, especially in that 3 spot. And then Yiner Diaz of the Astros went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 RBI, and 2 runs. I know it's just 7 games into the season, but Yiner Diaz, a catcher, has a .462 batting average, .517 OBP, and a .1248 OPS. These two homers were his first two of the year, but going into the season, I was all in on Diaz in drafts, and I fully expect him to be one of the best catchers in fantasy baseball this year. I don't know why more people weren't on the bandwagon. I feel like a lot of people were in on the hype to begin draft season, but then as it went on, they were like, oh, I don't want to pay that cost, and didn't really make it a priority to get him, where I drafted Yiner Diaz ahead of Will Smith in some leagues, ahead of Salvador Perez in some leagues. Like, I went all in on Yiner Diaz, really. Like, I traded for him in a dynasty league. Like, I really like this dude. So I think he's going to be, maybe my bold prediction, the best catcher in fantasy baseball, but he'll have to outperform people like Adley Rutschman, JT Realmuto, Will Smith, of course. So he's got a little bit of work to do, but I think batting 5th or 6th in that Astros lineup as the everyday catcher, maybe DHing on days where he's not catching, being that guy, I really, really like Yiner Diaz for this season. I think if you can buy low on him, obviously can't really buy low on a guy with a .462 batting average and 2 home runs, but if you can get a hold of Yiner Diaz for a cheaper cost than what people paid in their drafts, I would try to get him. And then lastly, on Monday, we had Jarren Duran of the Red Sox, who went 3-for-5 with 2 runs, an RBI, and 3 stolen bases. Duran is already up to 6 stolen bases in 7 games, with a .393 batting average and .469 OBP. He hasn't had any extra base hits yet, or any homers, but he is running wild on the base path in that leadoff spot for Boston. He can easily go 15, maybe 20 homers and 40 steals this year and become the breakout outfielder that we were all hoping for. So my fingers are crossed. I actually only have 1 share of Duran, which kind of stinks. I really liked him last year, but I just didn't end up getting him in drafts this season because around the time he was being drafted, I was kind of grabbing pitchers. So unfortunately, I don't have many shares of Duran, but I really like the profile, and I think he can break out this season.
I really like Yiner Diaz. Yeah. Similar to you, I mean, I was just looking at the projections, and it feels weird to say it, but like, he has a similar projection to Will Smith.
Yeah.
And so like, this whole idea of like drafting him above Will Smith, like, yeah, I totally get it. Like, it to me, it was almost like a coin flip, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you have Yiner Diaz, you're not going to trade for Will Smith. If you have Will Smith, you're probably not going to trade for Yiner Diaz. But they're so similar in what they could potentially bring to the table that, it's regardless of which one you picked, I think you're pretty happy with what you got. But yeah, it's kind of weird to think that, you know, having Yiner Diaz is okay compared to having Will Smith. So
yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that too. And it's not wrong to take Will Smith there too.
Yeah.
Because he's in the Dodgers lineup and he's batting 4th or 5th. I mean, he's in the most prime situation possible. But I had Will Smith in a lot of leagues last season, and he was great. He was great for me in an everyday catcher role, played a majority of the games, did really well, got tons of RBI. I loved it. But I think Yiner Diaz actually has more power potential and maybe even a slightly better batting average ceiling. So I don't know. Their lineups are comparable. I mean, you got Altuve, Alvarez, Bregman, Tucker, and Yiner Diaz as your top 5. And then you have, obviously, Mookie Betts, Otani, Freeman, and Will Smith as your top 4. Those are great lineups. Probably the 2 best front 4 lineups you can have in baseball. So I think both of their situations are similar. Mm-hmm. And I just like the upside of the younger Yiner Diaz
totally
in this situation. So that's why I went with him.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I don't. Did you see the video of Mike Trout's second homer?
Oh my God, it was a moonshot.
Yeah, that went far. He still got it.
Yeah, you don't see people hit it that far in Marlins Park ever.
Yeah, he still got it. He's going to be like the first, 60 homer player to play for a team that wins 60 games. So yeah,
I've seen all of the memes about that, man.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, the fact that he has 3 homers and 3 RBI right now is just funny. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. No one can get on base in front of him. Anthony Rendon hasn't had a hit this season. There's been memes with that as well, where it's like the last time Anthony Rendon had a hit, Nolan Shanuel was in college. And then Nolan Shanuel in that time was drafted, played for single A, double A, made it to the major league team, and got a hit before Rendon.
Yeah.
It's actually hilarious and sad at the same time.
Yeah. It's also kind of rough because so for the Angels, right, they currently have Miguel Sano at first, I believe.
Yep.
And Nolan Shanuel, who obviously is, you know, their big their rookie from last year, isn't starting for that team. And then at the same time, Jared Walsh goes out and is like, he's actually doing kind of solid for the Texas Rangers.
Yep.
Which is pretty impressive. Obviously, I'm a big Jared Walsh guy. I was really hoping he'd come back from injury well last season, and it didn't happen. But through 6 games, he's looking pretty good for the Rangers. So it is kind of interesting to see how that has also worked out for the Angels this season.
Yeah. That definitely is interesting to see. But moving on to pitchers from Monday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Blanco Scoreboard SP Roundup article. We start with the aforementioned main headliner of that Astros game. Ronel Blanco of the Astros went 9 innings pitched, no earned runs, no hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts against the Blue Jays. In his 8th major league start, Ronel Blanco threw the first no-hitter of the 2024 season. This guy is 30 years old, made the starting rotation after his final start in spring training, welcomed his new daughter into the world, and threw a no-hitter in his first start of the year. He is having quite a week. Blanco is only 36% rostered on Yahoo, and even though this is most likely his best performance of the year, I don't think he is going to top this one. He is still worth a flyer in 10-team leagues and greater due to his upside. He was really good in spring training, and then this start obviously is the ceiling that you are hoping for, but he's not going to do this again, and he should be a good piece in that rotation. I mean, at least until Verlander and everyone recovers and comes back from their injuries. But I think Blanco might stay depending on how well he does, because this was obviously a great first impression. Next, we have Shota Imanaga of the Cubs, who went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, 2 hits, no walks, and 9 strikeouts against the Rockies. Yes, it was the Rockies on the road, and the four-seamer wasn't great, but the splitter was incredible, returning a 50% swinging strike rate with 12 whiffs. I personally have a load of shares of Imanaga, and I won't lie, I'm even more excited about him after this start. I know it's just one start against one of the easiest opponents that you can have, but I love what I saw, and I loved his energy. He was hyped up after striking out, I believe it was Nolan Jones, to finish the 6th and get a quality start. You can't spell Imanaga without I'm an AGA, which, if you haven't done so already, buy the shirt with that phrase on it on shop.pitcherlist.com. We sell those shirts. They actually look really cool. So if you are a Cubs fan or an Imanaga fan, definitely go and check out that shirt on shop.pitcherlist.com. Lastly, we have Tanner Houck of the Red Sox, who went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, 3 hits, no walks, and 10 strikeouts against the Athletics. All of Houck's pitches in this one were above a 40% CSW, leading to a 42% CSW for the day. The slider, the sinker, the splitter, and the cutter, all above 40% CSW. That is pretty good. Once again, like Imanaga, the opponent was weak, being the Athletics, but they're still pesky, and Houck carved them up with ease. Houck's velocity seemed to be up after spring training, but it didn't hold true in the start. It was back down to what we're used to. Regardless, if he's available on your wire, I would run to pick him up, because the Red Sox rotation and their pitching coach's philosophy looks to be extremely rewarding for fantasy managers. As I mentioned when we talked about Nick Pivetta, the pitching coach was saying stuff like, you have to save your fastball as a bullet and to build around the secondaries, make that foundation, establish the zone with the secondaries, and then use that fastball as an out pitch, as a builder to, you know, shoot those bullets when you need to. And just the stuff he was saying and all of the quotes that were coming out, I really bought into it, and I like what that Red Sox rotation is doing. He's only 31% rostered on Yahoo, and he gets the Angels next, so if Houck is out there, I would definitely recommend picking him up.
Yeah, so I've got a fun question for you.
Okay.
I have Luis Heal on my team right now.
Okay.
Do I drop him for Tanner Houck? This is a quality start, K per nine league. And I think the answer is yes, but I'd like to hear your opinion.
So I was going to ask you, is it a wins league or is it a quality start league? And since you said it's a quality start league, I would 100% drop Luis Heal for Tanner Houck. And the reason being is I think Tanner Houck's always had more potential and we never really saw it and it never really stuck. But I think that the Red Sox rotation is going to be in a great place this season. And if this is his upside, once again, bad offense. But with his arsenal, the fact that he's able to do this is something that I think he'll be able to replicate more than anything Luis Heal can do. I think Heal's going to have some fantastic starts, and I think he's going to provide a lot of wins being on the Yankees. But I don't see him getting a lot of six innings pitched for, you know, those quality starts. And when Gerrit Cole comes back, does he stick in the rotation? I don't know.
Right.
So I would definitely go with Houck.
Yeah, it's nothing against Heal. I think it's just I think there's more potential with Houck right now.
I agree completely.
And again, like you said, if Cole comes back, and let's assume Cole is healthy, right? Heal is the first guy to probably get kicked out of the rotation.
Yep.
And sit down the AAA. So, yeah, I think that's probably what I'll end up doing tonight on the waiver wire. So
yeah. I like that move.
Yeah. I mean, beyond that, obviously, Rinel Blanco, just insane. A no-hitter in the first week of baseball is actually kind of crazy. But
yeah.
The funny thing, I think, is that he threw 105 pitches, and, like, all these guys around him were, like, dropping at, like, mid-70s. Because no one's just stretched out, right?
Right.
But they were like, well, this guy's on a heater, so let's just keep him in.
So, yeah, might as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I really want to. I would pick up Blanco. There's a possibility that he sticks in the rotation for sure. It's hard to discount no hitters, but at the same time, like it does feel like he was just up there because Justin Verlander is not there, right? And
right.
If JV really is coming back at the end of this month, that means you're probably going to get 2, 3, 4 starts out of Blanco left, right?
Yep.
Basically, he's a guy you should probably pick up just for the speculative ad. But yeah, don't be like going out to spend fab on him if you are, if you're in like one of those weekly leagues. So
yeah, don't dump the house on Rinel Blanco. And I would actually prefer Tanner Houck over Rinel Blanco. So
yeah,
if you have to make that decision, definitely put more fab bids or make sure your priority lies with Tanner Houck.
Mm-hmm. And then if anything too, like it's historically, and I think part of this is because it's also just his first start of the season. Pitchers don't really do too well the game after a no hitter anyways, because they're just so worn out from throwing that many pitches. So just something to keep in mind.
Definitely.
All right, moving on to Tuesday, April 2nd. Thanks to Mark Stubinger for the Shrimp Fried Bryce article for the Batter's Box. And we are going to start off with the title boy in Bryce Harper, because how can you not start with a guy who hit 3 homers, 3 runs, and 6 RBI in one game? Honestly, really slow start to the season for Harper. I think he was 0 for 11 up until that point, but he came alive on Tuesday with 3 bombs. They collectively traveled 1,209 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, and his grand slam in the 7th was the cherry on top. And I don't know, did you see this video of the umpire cam of Harper hitting that homer?
No, I actually didn't. As someone who sees everything, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was so interesting because I didn't know what pitch. Brent Suter was the reliever at that point, and he was throwing a pitch to Harper, and I was like, wow, that's kind of low and inside. I'm surprised Harper was able to turn on it. And then I looked at, you know, where the pitch was on Savant, then it was like, yeah, it's straight up like a sinker that's like out of the zone, you know, down and low. And Harper somehow turned on it and took it 422 feet.
Wow. So, you have to send me that after the podcast.
Yeah, it's a sick umpire cam view. But yeah. He's pretty good. So, I mean, yeah, it's obviously annoying he went 0 for 11, but, you know, I think that's the case with a bunch of these hitters, right? They're still finding their stroke, and one time they come alive, and Harper obviously is a guy who is looking healthy, right? He should be able to contribute in a major way over the course of the season. So it's just nice to get 3 homers from him in one game. The other guy to talk about, Garrett Cooper of the Chicago Cubs. He went 3 for 4 with a double, a triple, and a homer. 2 runs, 3 RBIs, and a walk. Cooper broke out as kind of a mini star in Miami last year. He hit 13 homers and 46 RBI in the first half of the season before being traded to San Diego at the deadline. However, that transition to San Diego ended up going poorly as he hurt his wrist and was in and out of the lineup, only playing half of the games for the second half of the season. The Padres released him, and he ended up signing a minor league deal with the Cubs and managed to make the opening day roster. And on Tuesday, he finished a single shy of the cycle. That being said, I think it's going to be difficult for Cooper to have consistent at-bats this season, as it kind of looks like he's only going to be the lineup against lefties, so I wouldn't go out and grab him immediately after this performance. If you're in a deep league, maybe it makes sense, but it still feels like he's kind of getting platooned in Chicago. It's not like there's, you know, a lot of stars ahead of him necessarily. Obviously, Cody Bellinger is there, but... you know, they can kind of do some, you know, moving around. But it does look like he's kind of getting platooned in Chicago for now instead of being an everyday hitter.
So for Garrett Cooper, I've been tricked by him before, believe it or not. He was on like a really hot stretch, I believe like 2 years ago. And I was like, okay, I'll pick up Garrett Cooper, fine. And then he did nothing for the rest of the season. So it's obviously kind of a trap. But in those deeper leagues, anybody is useful. So we got to throw the name out there. Garrett Cooper did have a great game. And I think he can be useful for fantasy, but as John mentioned, he's probably going to be a platoon bat. So he might not be very useful, but if there is an injury from anybody, he can play the infield and outfield. I believe he plays third base and outfield. So if there's any injuries, which we don't root for, then Garrett Cooper might get some full-time playing time. And if he does, then maybe consider adding him in those deeper leagues. But for now, he's just a name to maybe keep watch of. And as for Bryce Harper, just a reminder to everybody, don't panic about your superstars. They're going to be fine. It's literally 1 week into the season. He was 0 for 11. People were like, oh no, oh my God. Three home runs. Now he's batting, what, 300 something and has an OPS of 1,000? Like, it's not a big deal. Just relax, everybody. He will be just fine.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick for the March Madness article for pitchers. And we are going to start with Framber Valdez of the Houston Astros going up against Toronto in a no decision. 7.2 innings, 0 earned runs, 6 hits, 0 walks, and 5 strikeouts. It was redemption day for a couple aces on Tuesday, and that started with Framber. After a shaking opening day start against the Yankees, where he threw his cutter only 3 times, he followed that up with an elite start, shutting down the Blue Jays. But then he only relied on his cutter 9 times. This is especially weird considering that he used that pitch 13% of the time in 2023. But in classic Framber fashion, he relied on elite command, painting the edges with a sinker. So 7.2 shutout innings, but only 5 strikeouts. And that is kind of the most Framber start ever. I think the most Framber start actually would have been 7.2 innings, 3 earned runs, and 5 strikeouts. But hey, I'll take the shutout from Framber there. And then Zach Gallen of the Diamondbacks up against the Yankees got a win there. 6 innings, 0 earned runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts. The other ace to have a good night was Gallen. And the four-seamer, while it's not at the velocity that we'd like to see at, and because of that, it only got 0 whiffs, he was still able to get his other pitches to work out. He only finished with 4 whiffs, so it's actually kind of impressive that he managed 6 strikeouts. But the location was good enough for Gallen, and you know, sometimes that works for him. He's never really had elite swinging strike rates anyways, but it felt like after his 2023 season, there was more potential for growth in that area. The secondaries are seeing some improved success in the whiff rate, but the fastball swinging strike rate dropped from 9% to 3%, so that one's just not in a good spot. It's about like 1 to 2 ticks lower than it was last year. So something's up with Gallen, and hopefully he can find that velocity. If that goes up again, Gallen is, you know, probably firmly back to ace status. But for now, it's kind of just a wait and see. Obviously, he's still an ace, but it feels like there's chances for blowups for Gallen, or you know, some lack of strikeout numbers for him as the season goes on.
Yeah, it was really nice to see Framber bounce back. We know what he can do already. We've seen it before. It's the same guy over and over again, and hopefully he can continue to do what he always does. This was a nice redemption day, as you mentioned. And then Zach Gallen, I'm very worried about. I faded him all season long in drafts because He pitched so many innings last year. It has nothing to do with his talent or ability. I think Zach Gallen is a phenomenal pitcher, top 10 when fully healthy. I really like Gallen, but for this season, I avoided him completely. And because of this, the four-seamer velocity was not great. It got zero whiffs, like you mentioned. That's horrible. Obviously, it's against the Yankees, and they've got a good lineup, but Gallen just really didn't look like he had anything in that. Granted, he looked like he had nothing, and he still had zero earned runs and six strikeouts and a quality start. So, I mean, can you really complain? But I just don't see this getting much better throughout the season, and I can see some big blow-up starts and that strikeout rate coming down, and I just see disaster here. I hope it's not true, but I'm very scared about Gallen.
Yeah, it's I remember, what, two seasons ago, we had a conversation with Nate Schwartz on Gallen.
Right.
And at the time, it was like, hey, this guy has, you know, two pitch mixes, so to speak, right? He's got his fastball and his changeup and curveball, I believe, and then he's got his kind of slider cutter thing going. And it's like, both of those could work, but they don't really work well together. And I think he's been plagued by this issue where he hasn't figured out what he wants to be good at, right, in a sense. I don't know if this is actually a psyche. I think just from an outside perspective, though, it's like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And that when that fastball isn't working and he starts and he needs to rely on that cutter slider mix to work, it doesn't look great. So yeah, he'll get a start where it's, you know, six innings, no earned runs, six strikeouts, really solid, but the underlying stuff just doesn't look great.
Yeah, definitely looks worrying. But we are going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about Wednesday and Thursday's performances, some streamer recommendations, and a little bit of mailbag questions from the Pitcherless community, so stay tuned. We are back, and it's time to get into Wednesday from this past week. So, Wednesday, April 3rd, we have the Shut Up and Your Dance With Me hitter recap article, thanks to Seth Klusmeyer. We start with the hitter Yordan Alvarez of the Astros, who went 4-for-5 with a double, 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. We always mention how when Rafael Devers goes up against Gerrit Cole, it's a guaranteed home run. Well, Yordan against Bassett is starting to feel like the same thing. Yordan is now 8-for-18 with 5 homers against Chris Bassett. It was really funny, actually, at the end of the inning when Yordan was jogging off the field and Bassett was walking off. Bassett went over to him and said, "You're expletive, killing me, man." And they both laughed and smiled. It was a really good video. If you haven't seen it, check it out on Twitter or YouTube or find it somewhere, because it was really funny. I mean, you could tell Chris Bassett's just like, man, this guy destroys me. So I always love seeing sportsmanship like that. But anyone that was worried about Yordan after the first week, hopefully this calmed your nerves a bit, just like Bryce Harper, who everyone was freaking out about having 0 hits already. Hopefully it calms you down. Same with Francisco Lindor having 1 hit. He will be fine, everybody. Calm down. There's clearly nothing to worry about with Yordan Alvarez, especially with him setting a StatCast record in this one, being the first player to ever have 5 batted balls with an exit velocity over 105 miles per hour and 3 batted balls with a projected distance of 400 plus feet in a single game. Yeah, he's pretty good. Don't worry about Yordan Alvarez. Next, we have Seiya Suzuki of the Cubs. He went 3-for-5 with a home run, a run, and 4 RBI. Speaking of hitting the ball hard, Seiya Suzuki has been ripping the cover off of the ball as well. The home run that he hit in this one was 105 miles per hour, and it left in a hurry. I think Suzuki will be able to eclipse the 30-homer mark for the first time this season, and I'm sad that I don't have any shares of him this year because in a very thin outfield position, he seems like he's already a draft day bargain, and I hope that he has a great season because it would be nice to see someone like him have a giant success for a year, because he was always hyped up and rumored to have these big home run seasons, and it hasn't really happened. He's had a solid season, but we would like to see someone who came over from Japan and just dominate in Major League Baseball. And lastly, we have Mikel Garcia of the Royals, who went 2-for-5 with a home run, a run, an RBI, and a stolen base. Garcia had 4 home runs in 123 games last season. Well, after Wednesday's game, he's up to 3 already in 2024. He's also racked up 4 runs, 8 RBI, and a stolen base. Garcia is looking to be a true breakout candidate to start the season. He's batting leadoff in front of Bobby Witt, has third base and shortstop eligibility on Yahoo, and even though there's some questions about the power there still, he's hitting the ball harder than ever, which is just very promising to see. And then lastly, shout out to Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, who both hit their first home run of the season.
Yeah, shout out to Carson McCart for the Michael Garcia breakout call.
Yeah, yep, we had him on, and he was all in on Michael Garcia, and hey, we should have listened. I mean, I missed out on him pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, he's available in my home league, so I'm really considering it right now. Let's just say that.
I would definitely grab him if you have a spot open.
Yeah, I don't, but I can make a spot. So
yeah, make that spot. At least until he falls off.
Right, exactly. It's like him or Max Muncy right now is kind of what I'm deciding between.
Ooh, that's a tough one. That one hurts.
Yeah. That being said, though, hey, Yordan doing Yordan things, right? So.
Yep.
It's that's just scary.
Yeah, big time scary. But moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Wishing Kel SP Roundup article. We start with Nathan Eovaldi of the Rangers. He went 7 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts against the Rays. Eovaldi dominated in this one with 12 whiffs on the splitter. He looked like the pitcher that we know he can be. He just needs to stay healthy. Surprisingly enough, his value in drafts wasn't through the roof, so he was actually a good value and can perform like an ace for you in fantasy. Next, we have the GOAT. It seems so weird saying the GOAT. Cole Reagans of the Royals, who went 6.1 innings pitched, no earned runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts against the Orioles. Speaking of aces, in comes Cole Reagans. He allowed only 1 batted ball above 95 mile per hour all game, and the 2 walks on his line came in the 7th inning. Reagans absolutely painted the zone in this one with 98 mile per hour fastballs dotted on the outside corner, threw a nasty cutter in on the hands to right-handed hitters, and a changeup that disappeared at the last minute on the same tunnel plane as those 98 mile per hour fastballs that are dotted. It is just not fair. Reagans is so good, and it's a pleasure watching him every time he's on the mound. It's truly awesome to see an ace in the making, and Cole Reagans is just so fun. The fact that he did a pitcherless interview with Nick Pollock as well just makes him infinitely better, and man, this guy is awesome. And then lastly, a bad performance that we're highlighting for the first time this year. George Kirby of the Mariners went 3.2 innings pitched, 8 earned runs, 10 hits, no walks, and 2 strikeouts against the Guardians. Kirby looked horrible in this one. He still didn't walk a batter, but his velocity was down 1-2 ticks, and he gave up 10 hits in total. I think that this is just a blip on the radar, and it's nothing to be concerned about, but if he has another stinker the next time out, maybe the next time out, I'll start to raise my eyebrow just a little bit. However, I just had to mention Kirby's name and remind all of you that it's early in the season, it's cold, they're still trying to get warmed up, and don't give up on your studs. It's too early. George Kirby is not washed. He just had a really bad game, and hopefully he can right the ship next time out.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add other than I'm really annoyed that the Twins are going to have to face Cole Reagans every single year, like multiple times.
Yeah, that's not going to be fun for you.
Oh, man, it's like it's cool to see him like go from a guy who like pretty much was like cast off by the Rangers, gets traded to Kansas City, who historically have not done any good pitching development.
Correct.
And then just, yeah, becomes a monster. So, honestly, all props to him for figuring it out.
Yeah, it was really cool. There was actually something on MLB Network that I was watching where Al Leiter was showing the changes he made. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't look like much when you look at the video side by side from when he was on the Rangers to when he became a starter on the Royals. But his center of gravity and the way he's lined up, which Al Leiter was talking about, is so much better nowadays, where he's able to now be more direct to the plate instead of being off balance and then turning and coming over the top where he would lose velocity because he's really trying to recover and then throw, rather than it just being all naturally one motion, kind of like Jacob deGrom does, where everything is all in one quick and easy motion. Cole Reagans kind of perfected that, and that really is what led to the uptick in velocity. So if you haven't seen that already, I definitely recommend looking up the Al Leiter clip talking about Cole Reagans from MLB Network.
All right, well, I'll have to take a look. Moving on to Thursday's games, not a big slate, but there's still some performances to look at. Connor Joe of the Pirates went 1-for-3 with a homer, 2 RBI, and 2 walks. Don't look now, but through 6 games, Connor Joe is slashing .346, .469, and .615. I'm serious. That's an OPS over 1,000. In Thursday's game, he hit his first homer of the season, but he also earned 2 walks. He's been in the lineup consistently through the start of the season since the Pirates have faced a bunch of lefties, and he's led off for the team in those starts. However, Thursday's game was against a righty, and the Pirates actually let him DH in the 5th spot. So maybe there's some hope for him to be more of a consistent hitter as the season goes on. I knew there was some worry that he would be, you know, platoon, but it looks like the Pirates are kind of willing to stick with his hot bat. So maybe there's an option there to pick up in a deep league. And then Nolan Arenado of the St. Louis Cardinals, 3-for-5 with 1 run, 1 RBI, and 1 double. It's been a very slow start to the season for Arenado, as he's currently slashing .265, .278, and .324. I'm really curious if he's going to go back to being more of an all-fields hitter, as last year he also started the season by pulling the ball a lot more. That all being said, it's 34 at-bats and 24 batted ball events, so extremely small sample size, but half of those batted ball events have been pulled. Again, only 5% of the season, nothing has stabilized at this point. Yes, he has a 0% barrel rate, but it's not something to be extremely worried about right now. That being said, though, this feels more like a time-will-tell situation for now. And maybe in a month then, we can actually panic about Arenado if stuff has not turned around.
Yeah, I historically am a huge Nolan Arenado fan. And this season, I actually ended up with no shares of him because I really wasn't interested. I almost would rather a Jake Berger or Ke'Bryan Hayes later on in the draft rather than reaching for Arenado around the, I don't know, 5th, 6th, 7th round range, depending on what size your league is. So I didn't end up with any shares of him, and I'm just kind of worried about him and Goldschmidt and all the older Cardinals players.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Obviously, last year, there was really nothing to be excited about between the two. Goldschmidt has a hard time hitting fastballs. Arenado just seems off balance most of the time. I don't know. It's hard to describe because when I think of Arenado, I always think of the quintessential 35 to 40 home run hitter with 100 RBI. And now if he's a 260 hitter with 25 home runs and 80 RBI, it's just not as enticing as it once was. So I don't know. I'm kind of out on Arenado, unfortunately, in total. I'm not worried. I think he's still going to put up the numbers that you're asking from him for the fantasy season. It just will come a little bit slower than you're used to because he's getting a little bit older and it's getting a little bit harder out there. So we'll see about that. And yeah, Connor Joe, hey, it's good to see him doing something in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has a lot of reclamation projects. Him, Michael A. Taylor, they've got some options out there. So it's pretty cool to see Connor Joe doing well for the Pirates.
Yeah. And then pitchers, two interesting names, I think, very diametrically opposite names. But Matt Manning of the Detroit Tigers went up against your New York Mets in a no decision, 5.2 innings with 0 hits, 0 earned runs, 4 walks, and 3 strikeouts. I will say I don't think we all expected Matt Manning to get called up this quickly after being optioned of AAA after spring training, but thanks to a doubleheader today, the Tigers called him up, and he shined with 5.2 no-hit innings. That all being said, he only finished with a 24% CSW. He was getting away with a bunch of fastballs and sliders in the zone as well. He only gave up 3 hard hits, though, and took advantage of a pretty poor Mets offense. I would expect him to be sent down to the minors immediately after this one, because, again, I think he was the emergency call-up, so I think the Tigers have to send it back down. But I would not rush to go out and pick him up the next time he gets called up. It just doesn't feel like there's really any stuff there to be excited about. And then Tanner Bibee of the Cleveland Guardians went up against my Twins. Oh, man, they're just getting beat up this week. But, yeah, he got a win, 5.1 innings with 5 hits, 1 run, and 9 strikeouts. At this point, I might just recommend a random pitcher against the Twins as a streaming option because you definitely get a lot of strikeouts in that start. Bibee struggled in his first start against the hapless A's, and he couldn't find any ways to get a bunch of strikes against that team. However, in this start, he managed to get 17 whiffs, finishing with a 33% CSW. However, he was still a bit lucky in that he gave up 6 hard-hit balls, but the Twins just couldn't string those hits together. I think it's still worth keeping Bibee if you roster him, but the fastball isn't there yet, and that needs to get better.
Yeah, so we'll start with Matt Manning, and I think him and Jose Buto from the Mets will both be immediately sent down because they were, like you said, the emergency starters for the doubleheader. And like you said as well, I agree. I wouldn't go and rush to pick him up next time he gets called up. He really didn't show anything too special in this one. I was more interested in the first game with Casey Mize on the mound.
Yes.
And I was hoping to see a little bit more out of Mize. He looked great, by the way. And Angel Hernandez was the home plate umpire. So in general for that game one, I think Mize pitched better than the line overall shows. But Matt Manning, for instance, 4 walks, no hits because the Mets just were tragic. We actually broke out of it this game and we won this game and the bottom of the 9th, so that was good to see. But yeah, Manning made work of a pretty much defeated at that point Mets lineup because we lost the first game of that doubleheader and it just was not looking good. So Matt Manning was able to pry at the maybe mentally not prepared Mets at the time. And he didn't really show too much flair. I mean, 3 strikeouts in nearly 6 innings. Obviously, no hits and no runs is fantastic, but 4 walks, 24% CSW, just nothing to be excited about. So Matt Manning, nothing to be seen here right now. And then with Tanner Bibee, I'm actually really upset with your Twins, John. And I hate to air this out on the podcast because don't want to cause any beef. But man, I was so excited to draft Byron Buxton this year because he was such a good value. And he hasn't done anything for me yet. I actually bet him to hit a homer today because I felt really good about it. He did nothing but strike out. Every time I watched him get up to the plate, strikeout. Horrible. And then I bet Pablo Lopez to have over 5.5 strikeouts. The man got 2. What happened here? Everyone is getting torched by the Guardians. I mean, George Kirby, torched by the Guardians. I mean, just the Guardians are like my least favorite team right now because of everything they're doing to the teams that I'm watching and the players that I'm rooting for.
Yeah, it was a weird game. So it was the home opener for the Twins, but they had played a game in Milwaukee just yesterday. Travel just being what it is, I don't know if that really affected anyone particularly. But yeah, Pablo was giving up a lot of hard hit balls, which was very surprising. Not a good start as well. But for some reason, and this is like a whole superstition, like the Twins are terrible in day games. Like they're absolutely garbage in day games.
Good to know.
And this game had, I believe it was like a 110 first pitch or something like that, maybe.
It was early.
It was a day game.
It was a day game.
So, yeah, it used to be kind of a funny thing where it was only Max Kepler who sucked in day games, but apparently like it became a thing where like the entire team was terrible in day games. So
wow.
So you know, really only care about the Twins when it's a night game. That's my betting advice there.
Okay, thank you, because I'll live and I'll learn on that one because I bet very heavily. I was like, oh yeah, Pablo Lopez over 5.5 easy strikeouts.
Yeah,
Buxton, right. Okay, he's gonna take Tanner Bibee deep, no problem. And then all I saw was strikeouts and not from Pablo Lopez, so it was not great. But Tanner Bibee in general, he was so good last year, and there's a lot of hope for him. But like you said, the fastball needs to get better, and if it does, I think he could be very, very good this season. I mean, this was a great start from him. So
yeah, definitely.
But that wraps up the weekly performance recap from all of the games in the first full week of Major League Baseball. It's great to have baseball back and to be able to talk about that. Now we're going to move on to questions from the crowd. We asked some of the pitcherless community to give us some questions for fantasy baseball, and they gave us 3 in total. So we will talk about those. The first question was, who is the closer for the Royals? Should you keep Will Smith or pick up James MacArthur or someone else? And I'll start off with this one, John. My opinion here is I think Will Smith's the guy, but like so badly the guy. I don't know, man. It's hard because Will Smith is not great. Let's just get that clear. He's not good. He just always seems to find his way into a team that needs a closer. And he's got experience. And I don't think he's as bad as his last few outings, which were terrible. But I don't think he's good at all either. So I think it's Will Smith as a closer just because they really don't have anyone else to turn to. But if there was a guy to turn to, it would be the one that was named in the question, James MacArthur, who's been very good, but they're using him in like the 7th as like a firearm guy. And I don't know. I think that if anyone's going to usurp Will Smith, it's going to be MacArthur, but I would ride with Will Smith for the time being, but I feel really bad about it. Like if any other options out there, like Jason Foley, grab him over Will Smith or James MacArthur, because this is just going to be a dreadful bullpen the whole year.
Yeah. And the other thing about the Royals too, was that last year with Josh Stamout and Aroldis Chapman for the first half of the season, at least, right? They were bouncing between the two of them.
Yeah.
in terms of like who was going to get the save. Right? I think Staumont ultimately ended up with more save opportunities.
And Scott Barlow was in the mix too, right?
That's right. Scott Barlow was also there too. Yeah.
Yeah, they had so many options.
They did. And I think Scott Barlow maybe actually ended up with the closer role. Now that I'm thinking it back. But that being said though, like they're very much okay with the whole like committee fireman sort of situation, right?
Yes.
And it's the thing in baseball where it's like the closer role, you want to give it to the guy who has experience, right? That's what teams always think, right? Not you don't necessarily give it to your best pitcher. That's kind of what you reserve that fireman role for. And maybe that's what Mark Arthur ends up being for this team, right? But there's some guys who just do super well in that closer role. I don't know if Will Smith is one of them because he hasn't necessarily been like a full-time closer for any team for a while. But I don't know. I think for me, I'd probably if I have to choose between the two, right, I'd probably stick with Will Smith for a time being until it's like clear that he loses the job. Obviously you don't love two blown saves in the last week. That's just not good. But to say that means that MacArthur is like automatically going to get the spot over Will Smith, I don't think I would bank on that for now.
Yeah, I agree as well. I actually have Will Smith in one of my leagues. It might be TGFBI. Yeah, I think it is. And I'm kind of torn there because I need saves and I just can't drop Will Smith because if he is the closer, let's say, he might get me saves and that's what I need. So it's tough. This is a big mess of a bullpen. So I would try to steer clear from it if you can. But if you absolutely need to pick up one name from the Royals bullpen, I think I'd stick with Will Smith for the time being. I think he's going to have a longer leash. I think obviously his last two outings were horrible, but I think he gets at least two more blown opportunities before he's off the job. So that's my give or take on the Royals situation. It's not pretty. So try to avoid at all costs. Next question we have is there a reason to keep Matt Wallner? So Matt Wallner is a player on the Twins, usually a platoon bat. He's a lefty that bats against righties. I saw a tweet one time that said, Matt Wallner is a fantasy cheat code. So I apologize to the author of that tweet or that X post. But I read it, and basically it stated that Matt Wallner from the righty matchups is essentially like Matt Olson, where it broke down his last 162 games against right-handed pitchers or whatever and compared it to Matt Olson, and it was very similar in that regard. Now, obviously, he sits against lefties, and he's pretty much being platooned, but he is a good power bat from the left side against right-handed pitching. So is there a reason to keep Matt Wallner? I'm not sure. It depends how deep your league is, but John, you probably have a little bit more of an insight on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because not only is he platooned, he's also batting, you know, usually sixth or seventh in the lineup for the Twins. And so he just gets less at-bats than other outfielders. The big thing with him, obviously, is just he's big with swing and miss. But when he makes contact, it's pretty loud. Yeah, I think, like, I would probably only have Wallner in, like, the deepest of leagues anyways. And if you're in that situation, like, Wallner's probably a guy that you could probably cycle through with other outfielders that are, like, similar rostership rates. And if he gets on a heater, I think that's, like, it would be fine to pick him up then. I just think, like, if it's a situation where, like, Wallner is, like, severely, like, just not helping you out. Because let's be honest, in the first few games of the season, he's done absolutely nothing, right? He's played in four games for the Twins. Actually, I think it's five games now because of today's game. And he's managed one hit, I believe, on the season. So it's not good for him right now. And if it's kind of a situation where you're wondering, do I jump ship? I think it's fine to move on to someone else, right? There's plenty of outfielders who kind of fit the mold that Wallner can fill, which is like, you know, an occasional home run here and there, strike out a bunch, right? There's a lot of guys in those molds. And I think the problem with Wallner is that he doesn't really offer much besides the power. And because he's batting so much lower in the lineup, there's not that much RBI and run potential for him as well. So I would probably drop Wallner right now. And if all of a sudden that strikeout rate starts coming down a little bit, then maybe it would be time to look at him again.
So I found the tweet. It was from @DynastyInfo411 by a guy named Kirk Snyder.
Okay.
And he basically said Matt Wallner's a fantasy cheat code. Last year, he slashed 281, 409, 561 against right-handed pitching. And he compared it to Olson, Judge, and Alvarez, who basically had very similar lines in that regard. And then he compared it more directly to Matt Olson in 2023 through 608 at bats, 283 average, 54 homers, 139 RBI, 127 runs, and a 993 OPS. Now, Matt Wallner in 2023 with 608 at bat pace against right-handed pitching was a 281 average, 43 homers, 135 RBI, 139 runs, and 970 OPS. Now, obviously, this guy knows, and we know, he's not going to get 608 plate appearances or at-bats against right-handed pitching. He's going to play against right-handed pitching, and he's got the potential to be a good power bat in that scenario. But I agree with John, if there's a better option that's a full-time player, then yes, I would much rather go with that option as opposed to keeping Matt Wallner. I think it's absolutely okay to drop him. He's just going to be someone that when there is a righty on the mound, he will possibly supply you with a great power potential. But other than that, he's not going to supply much. So is there a reason to keep Matt Wallner from the question? Yes, there is. He's very good against right-handed pitching. But there's more reasons to not keep Matt Wallner because he is a platoon bat. And if he doesn't improve, he could just be a wasted space on your team. So, yes, there's a reason, but I think there's more reasons to drop him. And then lastly, we have one more question. And the question is, Jose Siri is stealing more and has the clearest possible path to playing time in Tampa Bay. Is there anyone else who fits this mold, and how should we approach them this time of year? So, John, I'll let you lead this one. We came up with a comp that's kind of close to Jose Siri and then some similar free comps. And what we're doing with all of them. So get us started here.
Yeah, so I mean when you're doing these comps, it's like always it's tough because it's just the beginning of the season, right? So no one's like truly matching up. But I think the guy that we both landed on is Ha-Sung Kim as a similarity here to Siri. Obviously Kim's got a little bit more stolen base potential with 38 stolen bases and 17 homers last season, while Siri last year had 25 homers and 12 stolen bases. Now, if Siri is stealing more, maybe that's something to be looking at. His highest totals for bags in a season was back in the minors in 2020, I believe, where he stole like 42 bags or something like that. That's I'm just pulling that out of my head. I don't actually know the exact number, but it's somewhere around there. So he's not necessarily like a big speed guy, but he has the speed, obviously. And if he's starting to steal more, maybe there's an opportunity for him to, become more of a complete player. Now, their similarities kind of end there. Siri is a much worse batter, 222 batting average, 267 OBP. Ha-Sung Kim, 260 batting average, 351 OBP, right? So I think for me, Ha-Sung Kim is what Siri could be, right? And obviously, I think that shows up in the rostership, right? Ha-Sung Kim definitely is far more on fantasy rosters than Jose Siri. Is there anyone does that mean that I want Siri over Ha-Sung Kim? I don't think so. But I think there's some potential there where that Siri could be like a legitimate like 2020 candidate. But yeah, the problem is the batting average and the OBP are pretty terrible. So if you can stomach like, some poor ratios, maybe Siri makes some sense there.
Yeah, the batting average is the main plummet for Jose Siri. If he can get the batting average up and have a breakout year, I could see him going 25 homers, 25 stolen bases with a 250 batting average, 305, 310 OBP, something like that. And that would play. That's something that is definitely playable in fantasy. Now, 25 homers and 12 steals last season was great, but a 222 batting average and a 267 OBP is just a sink in those categories. So yes, there is value for Jose Siri. He can be someone like Ha-Sung Kim with a little bit less speed. I see Siri maybe maxing out at 30 steals, whereas Kim can max out at 40. And I see Siri maxing out at 25, 30 home runs, whereas Kim maxes out at like 20, 15 maybe. So for me, Jose Siri is a great player, but I would rather, I mean, obviously Jose Siri is pretty much free across the board in fantasy. And if you could pick him up, it's worth taking a flyer on him. If he's having a breakout year, probably going to be good in Tampa Bay. They always seem to have guys that randomly break out and give you great fantasy stats. So why not take the plunge on Jose Siri? But if Jose Siri is already rostered, for instance, then some other guys that are kind of free that give similar roles to Siri where it's clear playing time and can steal bases, I would recommend Bryce Terang, Michael A. Taylor, and Will Benson. Bryce Terang has the most steals out of the group. Michael A. Taylor and Will Benson only have one, but Taylor and Benson might have a little bit more pop. Benson specifically probably is closer to Jose Siri than the other two names, but if you're looking for cheap steals, Bryce Terang is probably the best bet. He is playing a majority of the time. He's batting towards the back end of the lineup, but he does steal a lot. When he gets on base, he's stealing right now. So he clearly has the green light. The Brewers are running a ton. So I like Bryce Terang as a free option. But yeah, when it comes to Jose Siri, how should we approach him this time of the year? Just take a shot on him. And if he's not great, you got to get rid of him. Ha-Sung Kim, like we said, is the comp we have most similar to, where you got to give him a chance. And if he's good, great. If not, then you got to look elsewhere. But these kind of players, you really just got to take with a grain of salt and ride with the punches, because they're not going to be consistent. If they were, they'd be drafted in the first 8 rounds, right? Like, it's pretty obvious. They come with their own caveats. But Jose Siri could break out this year, and it's probably worth having him on your team if he does. But there are some other similar comps in how we are treating them in fantasy, kind of riding the hot streaks with them. But that wraps up all of the mailbag questions from this week. And with that being said, we will move on to our last segment, the streamers for next week. John, give the people some names for pitching and maybe a bat.
All right. Yeah, so I'll try to breeze through these. Starting out with James Paxton of the Dodgers. He goes up against the Twins on Monday, 26% rostered on Yahoo, 9% on ESPN. He just went up against the Giants and managed to somehow escape with no earned runs despite walking 5 batters. He still has some swing and miss in his game, and against the Twins, who just pretty much swing at anything, this feels like a good chance for a win and a lot of strikeouts. Next, we have Michael Lorenzen of the Rangers against Oakland on Wednesday. He is 0% rostered on Yahoo, 2% on ESPN. This is his first start as a Ranger, and I honestly have no idea if he's fully stretched out, but it's basically because he's playing the ace. I don't know if I need to say any more beyond that. If you're win chasing, this seems like a good opportunity, and you might not end up with some reasonable ratios, but obviously proceed with caution because Michael Lorenzen is not exactly a great pitcher. And then finally, Alec Marsh, who just had a pretty solid day this week of the Royals, goes up against the Mets. Man, I really like picking up on our teams, I guess. Saturday, that's his start. 2% roster on Yahoo, 1% on ESPN. He just dominated the Orioles for 7 innings, and while he wasn't wowing anyone with his stuff, he still finished with a CSW over 30%. Now he gets to face the second worst offense in the majors, and it feels like a great opportunity for a win as well. And then finally for the bats, JD Davis of the Oakland A's, 13% on Yahoo, 5%, or sorry, 13% on Yahoo, 5% on ESPN. I should probably apologize because I said last week that JD Davis was not a major league hitter. Well, the only thing he's done is hit in every single game that he's showed up in, and he's eligible at the hot corner. He's hit 2 homers and 2 doubles, and he's slashing .364, .417, .727. Look, he's likely not to be this good for the rest of the season, but at least he's batting cleanup in the last few games, and he's likely to be in the lineup against lefties and righties, because who else are the A's going to start? Abraham Toro?
Yeah, I don't think so. For the bat, I love the JD Davis recommendation. I was telling you, he's a major league hitter, and Oakland lineup, he looks like Barry Bonds. Let's be real. Like, genuinely, like, when he hit a homer, I think the whole Oakland lineup went, whoa, what's that? And they just watched the ball majestically travel through the air, because it is just embarrassing to see this A's lineup. And JD Davis being the boon of it, he just looks so good at the plate compared to the rest of them. It's actually a joke. So JD Davis, I love that recommendation. He's been great so far this season, and I think he's going to be a good veteran presence on that team to kind of help the rookies along the way, because they needed someone like that. And I think JD Davis is a good person to do that. So shout out to JD Davis. Just seems like a great guy. Ex-Met. Love that dude. And then for the pitchers, I would rank them as such. I would say James Paxton 1, Alec Marsh 2, and Michael Lorenzen 3. And mainly just because Michael Lorenzen, I don't think he's built up. Like you said, I don't know if he's fully stretched out. But hey, might as well throw him out there against Oakland. Maybe JD Davis has an off night and you get a shutout. So who knows? But
he only needs 5 innings to get the start, to get the win, right? So
yep, just need to survive 5. And you know the Rangers offense is going to score against Oakland. So
yeah,
I definitely like that for the wind chasers out there. But that wraps up the streamers for next week, and that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you all go, please follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. We love to get your questions in because then we can answer them like we did on this podcast and hopefully help you out for your fantasy seasons. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKe, that's THEJOHNKE, and you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal, that's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on, and please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.